Philadelphia, are you ready?
No, he said, are you ready?
This is Brotherly Love Wrestling Podcast, your first stop for everything professional wrestling. So sit back and enjoy wrestling talk at its finest with your hosts, Larry Hall and Joe Corrado.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Brotherly Love Wrestling Presents Fallout, our wrestling debate show. And today, we have a guest on our show who is debating the other host of our show, Joe, and that guest is Franco Varga. Franco, welcome back to Brotherly Love and first time here on Fallout.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. How you guys been? Good?
Good.
Good. Third time's a charm.
Yes.
Third time. So it was the first time I was leaving for Japan, and then I did the Jonathan Gresham match, and then the second time, I think it was me and Tony.
Yes.
Me and Tony. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
He brought us Tony for a quick sandwich, and then he fucking rolled out.
Yeah. So, and then now for Fallout. So, yeah.
Yes. So, for those who may have not seen our show before, this is a quick wrestling debate show. Yes, shame on you, first of all. But we'll have five topics that we'll touch on. Franco will go first. I'll take the topic, I'll say what it is, and Franco, you can pick whether you are for the topic or against the topic. You pick, and then Joe is stuck debating the other side and has to make up something, which he's pretty good at.
I could be the one I pick, though. You never know.
Yes, it could be. So we'll start out with an AEW question. And it'll be, will AEW become a superpower in wrestling like WWE? Or will they fall into the same predicament as WCW and TNA and fall into obscurity?
Okay, well, I mean, I am going to go with... I think they're not going to be around as long as everyone, as long as everyone thinks. I think, maybe I give it like 5 years, 5-6 years. And here's why. So eventually, the guarantees on these bigger name contracts are going to hit the high end, just like WCW. Mm-hmm. And I saw an alarming amount of guys getting signed in the beginning. I think it was something high, like 80 plus guys. And then Corona hit. All those guys kept their contracts, kept their jobs. I don't think anyone's been cut since. And then they just kept adding guys and giving opportunities, which is great, great, great for the business. Great, great, great for the guys that can get down to Florida and do it. But what happens to all the guys they're keeping? And then when Corona, all the restrictions lift, I think over time, a lot of those people are going to be cut. Things are going to trickle. Things are going to fall through the cracks. Cody's always going to be one of the top draws. Omega's going to be one of the top draws. The Bucks, of course. So, like, what happens when those contracts hit their peak and you got, instead of 3 to 4 top guys making top money, you now have 15 guys that you owe top money to and that you really can't cut over time. So I think it might run into it being a budget thing. I know they're doing pretty well in the ratings. We also haven't touched on Chris Jericho. His budget, the budget for Jericho alone has to be insanely high. And I don't see him going back. I don't know if it's a burnt bridge or not with WWE, but I don't see him going back, especially with the amount of money that I'm sure that I've heard he's gotten from them. So his popularity's gone through the roof. He's got his own crews now. I mean, he's got his band. He's got all that. So he really doesn't need wrestling, but why would you leave if they're paying you so much to stay? So what happens when you got to pay Jericho, you got to pay Cage, you got to pay Omega, you got to pay Cody, you got to pay the Bucks, you got to, I mean, Darby Allin. The list goes on and on and on. Sonny Kiss eventually will make a lot of money in the business. So it's like, what happens? Do you let them go elsewhere? Which is, they got Rusev. You're picking up a lot of guys. Where's this money coming from? And it's like, I don't think Daddy's gonna fund it after a certain amount of time. You know what I mean? I think football is finally back. So what happens when Daddy says, "Look, I don't really want to continue to fund this. Where's this money coming from?" They gotta have some major, major, major shows, some major, major, major draws as soon as the restrictions get lifted. I don't see that happening, unfortunately. And I'm talking 100,000 plus, you know, their version of WrestleMania, not just an all-out show or a what was the one with the one they did in Vegas?
Double or Nothing.
Double or Nothing. Yeah. You know, those are great shows for independent wrestling. They're competing with, and they say they're not competing. They're competing. You're competing with a giant, and you're competing with a giant that's been doing it for 30 years. So who has you in their crosshairs? Let's not even, you know, we're not even going to pretend like you didn't move. You didn't. You put your developmental product on Wednesday nights on USA Network specifically to compete with a brand new company. Of course, it's competition. I don't see, you know, with NXT being as popular and NXT being truly developmental. So what that means, those contracts are truly developmental. So those guys are kept
under a certain budget.
Yeah, those guys are kept under a certain budget. So like they're working their asses off to get to Raw or SmackDown, but they're working their asses off to compete with AEW. And those guys at AEW are not developmental. They're getting paid what they're worth. But what happens when the money runs up? I mean, hopefully Corona doesn't affect it long term. I'd love to see them, you know, last 10, 15, 20 years, 50 years, whatever. But I don't see it. I don't think, I think it'll definitely take a hit in the next 5 years.
All right, Joe, you went for the financials.
All right, so money, I know money always plays a factor, but I think that they're gonna withstand. I think that they're gonna be in it for the long haul, because if you look at it from a money aspect, as on the other side, Vince doesn't have the money to sign up all the people that would be let go from AEW, and Vince isn't going to keep around all his top tier talent because he just doesn't. They're going to get, except for Roman, Seth, and a couple others, he's not going to keep them around either. And they're going to be big names. And AEW is going to continue to be the top next step, the alternate for WWE for quite some time. And I'm glad you brought up WWE a bunch of times and them having the money and them having the formula. Their formula is not a secret. Their formula is easily replicated. And AEW can play from another strength and get a couple big name draws that are no longer working under WWE's wing and bring them in, just like WWE does for their big shows, like their WrestleManias, like their SummerSlam, like their any Royal Rumble. They can bring in these surprise former talents. It's because it's AEW, they will get a fan base that is like happy to see a part-timer, happy to see a legend, because it's not WWE. They'll be more excited because WWE, they hate when they bring back legends because they put the title on them. AEW has the formula and they can tweak it to their advantage. They can get those big names. They can, and after this pandemic, this is the time to strike when the iron is hot, when people are absolutely fiending to go to one of your shows. So you could possibly build enough story and keep it under wraps as best you can. You can build for something big to draw 40 to 50,000 and have a couple really big names. And then that sets you off for a little bit. That gives you that reputation. And that gives you a bigger platform now that more eyes will be tuning into. That's all the ratings are. They're going to get you the money. If you're pulling in 1 million, 2 million viewers and you're crushing the competition, there's no reason to turn you off. There's no reason to stop your funds. You're proving yourself. So if they continue to do this, there's going to be an abundance amount of wrestlers that can be signed that can help interchangeable parts in there if you get these big names. I think that they have it. They have this. They have the blueprint. They have what works and what doesn't. All they have to do is tweak it and make it their own.
Right, and you said something really I found super interesting, which is why I go back with the financials, because wrestling is a business, right? So you said interchangeable and tweaking. Until they come up with AEW, until they come up with their own version of what developmental and creating new stars and not signing old stars or guys that have been to WWE, they're going to run into an issue financially, because you can't pay a guy millions of dollars and then cut him and then expect him to go back to independent or a lower amount of money. They're going to come in and ask for that standard of living, right? So like eventually, my thing is they have to create stars. They're buying up stars, and that's great. But in the long run, they have to create stars. They have to, I saw that when they signed 80 plus guys that were, for the most part, independent. I was just like, okay, this is going to be great for the business. They're going to develop all these guys, and then it didn't happen. So,
here's the thing with creating stars, though. I mean, WWE is doing the same thing. They're not really creating stars anymore. They're bringing up the top tier talent from the independents, and they're putting them in their developmental to show them how the business works and put them into the. They're just a cog in the machine now. Unless you're someone who comes in and you're a huge name and you get skyrocketed right to the main. But that doesn't happen often. There's not. Keith Lee did a sneeze in NXT, but they saw his potential. He went up.
Of course.
Now, who's to say that AEW can't knock on that formula and do the same thing, except put them on TV right away? And you can create your stars quicker that way. And they also utilize YouTube, which is a huge media platform, which, if done right, if you see in Being the Elite alone, you can get your subscribers and your views up. So you have someone that is social media savvy and knows how to get the views and knows how to get people over. So if you look at someone like the Dark Order, like John Silver and Alex Reynolds, they're making them into YouTube stars, which will bring in that generation that is maybe not liking, which is the next generation, which doesn't like WWE product, and they're giving them an outlet right there. And they're making it known that we're not taking anything away from our talent. We're not taking anything away. We're letting them do their thing and make their money on the side. That's a huge draw for AEW, by the way. If they have that as a stipulation when someone comes over, then you can kind of negotiate and say, well, since you're able to do this, we're going to pay you a little bit less since you're able to do side work.
Right.
So that $6 million contract turns into a $3 million contract, and they save on their dollar. So they're able to make, they see you make $3 million off of your social media platforms. Well, here you go. You're making money there, so now you're coming in at the same, and you can still do it, and you're still making your money.
Right.
And these people are so creative.
Well, what's the update on YouTube? I thought are we able to monetize wrestling again? I don't think so. I don't think we've been able to monetize wrestling since late 2018. You know, What Culture Pro is a big example of that. They were huge. They were killing it. I mean, they had some of the best one-time matchups, first-time matchups of all time. Like, they had, I mean, Pentagon was damn near making a huge name for himself over there. And then YouTube cut the monetization, and the promotion itself was gone.
Yeah.
I think they're just a review show now.
Yes,
I don't think any monetization is on YouTube as far as pro wrestling goes. So,
well, Twitch then.
Well, I think Impact Wrestling and a few others, AAA, have tapped into Twitch. I don't know if it's the same as YouTube as far as the reach, but I don't think AEW, are they using Twitch?
They're using YouTube.
No, they're not using Twitch, though. Not AEW.
For them to put an entire show on YouTube, are they making money, or is that just to develop to put them on TNT eventually?
I think it's twofold. I think you're making big money off of advertisement.
I think they split. I know for a fact they split that with the network. That was their. Hopefully, their next deal is full advertising, like WWE gets, and that way, we'll see them, skyrocket and be able to do these huge shows. But right now, it's a split, and they also are on a network that has basketball full time, which is always a concern. But they're.
But they promote the hell out of it during those basketball games.
Yes, they do.
And they have more than one station. You're not just seeing it on TNT. You're seeing it on TBS. You're seeing it on FX. You're seeing it on
They run it on True TV as well, as far as the ads, because that's the same parent company.
Oh, they're on True TV as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, the ads are anyway for AEW. Yeah.
You're not getting the same eyes as on Fox. Like, because Fox has more eyes than TNT, but. I mean, you're still getting the eyes, and who's to say that someone else isn't going to want to pick them up down the road as well?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, maybe the USA Network finally you know, deal finally goes south and they pick up AEW, you know, because they've had wrestling forever. So that would be huge for them because USA is huge. It's a big network. So, yeah, I mean, TNT is not the end all be all for them. I don't think I don't see them going anywhere anytime soon.
I think that this is going to be a younger person's generation. Like, this is the new generation of wrestling. I mean, the tried and true will always be popular to an extent, but I think that people are craving something different. I think that AEW won't die down because, not to mention total viewership. Like, back when they were doing the actual Monday Night Wars and WCW went out of business, the total viewership was up almost, 1,000%?
Yeah.
They don't draw numbers like that anymore, so they can both stick around and get mediocre numbers forever.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to cancel wrestling forever.
No.
They're not going to just cancel wrestling. It'll figure out a way, and I think they're going to both figure it out together at the same time.
So WWE's already shown that they don't even need a network, you know, especially for the pay-per-view aspect. Like, everyone's got their own the WWE network to watch pay-per-views. What's to say they eventually grab their rights back for Raw and SmackDown and just put it all on the network, and like, that's $10 that they don't have to split with anybody, and they hook everybody, you know, they less people unsubscribing because they need that Raw and SmackDown and now the pay-per-view. So I wouldn't be surprised in the long term if they did that, you know, but it depends on the advertising money. So
kind of continuing with the theme with AEW, we saw an article this past week and people comparing Darby Allin in AEW to Sting. So that's where this next question is inspired by, is does it do the wrestlers of today a disservice by being compared to the big names of wrestling in the past? So Joe, since Franco took the first one, you have the choice on this one.
Dang it.
Does it do them a disservice or no?
I think it does do them a disservice in the fact that you're always living in a bigger draw's shadow. Like, I always think that when people are comparing someone that someone who might be Latino and someone that does a frog splash, they compare them automatically to Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero is a humongous shadow to be in. If you can never be yourself, you're never going to make it past that person. You can't be that same person. You're just always the knockoff brand of that person. And you always have to work hard, and you gotta hope that someone is invested in you to get you past that point, which no one seems to be anymore. Like, there's not ever gonna be, if you're compared to Stone Cold, as cool as that sounds, you'll never be Stone Cold. So you will never get above him. Therefore, wrestling will never get bigger than what it was. If you're compared to Hulk Hogan, that means you will never be bigger than Hulk Hogan. You always have to work to try and get to the same aspect as Hulk Hogan, but you never will be. You will be the bootleg of Hulk Hogan. You will be the $5 DVD sold out of the back of an Impala.
Dollar General Hulk Hogan. Yeah.
So if that is put into my mind, and me being... It hurt me because Sting's my favorite wrestler, and for that to be the comparison, like, that's something I don't want. I don't want there to be another Sting. I don't get the Darby Allin aspect. Like, I get it. I get the intangibles. Yes, he's wearing face paint that's black and white, and he's up in the rafters. But one person made that cool. No one else can do that. I mean, one person did that. Why are you gonna, like, Dolph Ziggler has forever been linked to Shawn Michaels. Dolph Ziggler will never be bigger than Shawn Michaels, and the company doesn't want that either. They had him. They want you to compare that to that person to try and give them that aura and try and get that draw power. But the fans are smarter than that. They're not. They're not going to be tricked into thinking, well, this person is going to be better than the legend that came before them. They'll never draw that scene. It's unfair to them. They'll never be able to be themselves if they're always compared to someone else.
Franco?
Well, I guess I gotta stick to the show. But I've always said it's true. I've always said, you know, we can only be the best version of ourselves to truly be successful. But you know, I think this happens to me all the time. I'll go somewhere and someone will be like, hey man, you're a pretty big guy. What do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a professional wrestler. That's why. Like what? And I'm like, especially if it's an older person, I say, well, you know, like the Hulk Hogan stuff. And they're like, oh, Hulk Hogan, right. So I think being compared, it's not going to be a detriment in the long run, because those legends are legends for a reason. And I think the casual fan, I'm talking the mom who takes her kids to do something and is really not a fan of pro wrestling. If you say Darby Allin, you say not so household names, even regardless of their age. I think if you throw in the legends like The Rock or like the Hulk Hogan's, like the John Cena's, you'll be able to attract those casual fans. So I think the comparison to a legend is purely marketing. It's not. It's you know, of course there's that there's pressure, right? I think that's the worst thing you can do as a wrestler is take that pressure to head and say, oh well, I'm being compared to Sting, I better live up to that. No, well, we're not asking you to do that. We're asking you to be yourself and be the greatest version of you that you can be. But I think that to attract casual fans, we have to say, yeah, this guy's like Sting, this guy's like Macho Man, this guy's like the Million Dollar Man a little bit, MJF, right? So in order to attract those casual fans, you don't put 100,000 people at WrestleMania that are hardcore fans. You don't do it. You don't do it. 100,000 people, there's no way all those people are hardcore fans. You gotta bring in a lot of casual fans to be successful. How you do it, you gotta remind them of the guys who they used to go with mommy or daddy to the Thunderdome the Sportatorium or the X whatever place. Oh man, the Rick Rudes, the Rock and Roll Expresses, the Carlos Colon's. I get D'Lo Brown all the time, right? So like, there's these huge shadows, and like, yeah, we could let it take over our careers, and like, oh man, like I just gotta be that good. No, we're not asking you to do that. No one's asking us to do that. It's purely marketing. I think it's purely for the
so. Basically, it's to appease the many and quite possibly hurt the few. So, personally, if I see someone that I'm not really a big fan of get compared to someone that I'm a big fan of, it makes me not want to be a fan of them more. So that's probably few and far between.
Right, right. So that's true. But let's say you're not a fan of this guy, and they say, oh, you never heard of this guy. And they say, oh, this guy's like Sting. Now you go look up that guy. That's marketing, right? So like, you've never heard of that guy, but who's this, who's like Sting? There's no way. I gotta see this guy. You looked him up. Guess what? You fell for it.
What if you're let down though? Then you're like, well, I'm not fucking looking at this.
But what happens if you do like the guy, right?
I mean, you're playing the odds.
Yes, of course. It's always. I mean, you got to see if you catch me liked or not, right? So, if I'm being signed and I'm like, what do you know for marketing wise? Well, we'll push it to all the D'Lo Brown fans of all time and tell them that you know, this guy's like D'Lo. You like him or not? Like you might have 50% of a following come and be attracted to me, a new signee. And the other 50%, there's no way this guy, he sucks. He's not like D'Lo at all. You're gonna get that. There's always pushback to everything. But now you just attracted 50% of casual fans that remember D'Lo Brown and now like this guy. So it's like, yeah, Darby might not be Sting. I don't think we're never gonna have another Sting. I think Sting compared to himself throughout the ages, you'll never have another Sting. The surface thing to me was better than the Crow Sting, and other people think Crow Sting was better than Surfer Sting. So at the end of the day,
it depends on what you like in wrestling. If you like energy, then you like surfer.
You like so at the end of the day, I don't think it's a detriment to say, hey, people, look at Darby Allin. he's like Sting. I think it's working because you put eyes on someone and you give the fans a chance to like him or not.
It gives the fans, which is ultimately what you want to do, is because you're trying to attract the fans. But those,
especially the casual fan.
I truly think it hurts the wrestler, and I think it does hurt the wrestling business a little bit, because I don't think you give them that draw power to ever become bigger. Like, if you want to grow exponentially, you can't. I mean, you have it in the back of your mind, like, there's never going to be a draw like Hogan. There's never going to be a draw like Flair. Like, and everyone has that in the back of their mind.
And that, yeah, but I think you will hurt the business if that guy turns into a tribute band of that wrestler. So, like, if I say, hey, this guy, we designed this guy, he's kind of like Hogan. If you remember Hogan, you'd love this guy. And, like, 50% of the people follow this guy. 2 years from now, they're never going to remember that this guy kind of was like Hogan. They remember that they liked this guy. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think it doesn't really hurt them if they don't try to become a tribute band to that wrestler. You know what I mean? I think, yeah, it would hurt the business if we're all tribute bands to you know, whoever we're inspired by. If we focus on being ourselves and being the best version of ourselves, being compared to a legend is just temporary marketing.
All right, so we spoke about obviously being compared to the greatest of all time. So with this next topic, in this sport that is as subjective as it is in professional wrestling, can there really be a greatest of all time? And Franco, you get to choose, yes or no, can there really be greatest of all time in professional wrestling?
Might I just say, this is the best show that Larry has put together. The flow of this is
impeccable. I appreciate that. Thank you.
These are good. I think... No, I don't think there'll ever be a GOAT in wrestling. And here's why. There's no real stats. So there's nothing for us to go by. We don't, you know, we can say 14, 15, 16 time champions, but a lot of the people know it's scripted, and it's all based on ratings, based on drawability, based on a lot of things. But wrestling changes every 5 years. And that's something that, you know, a lot of people understand about wrestling is you can be, you know, the best of that 10-year period. John Cena is the best of his 10-year period. Bret Hart's probably the best of his 10-year period. Hogan's probably the best of that 10-year period. But if you go back, there's a lot of different aspects. There's a lot of people that didn't like those guys. There's a lot of people that probably stayed home because those guys were on the card. So, like, can there be a GOAT? I don't think so. I think it's just too subjective. I think as long as the business is selling tickets and making money, conversation is just kind of a waste of time. I think that we need to be focusing on who's the best, you know, guy in that 5 year period. And then when there's a switch, there's a new guy. And like, this is why I always say, like, building stars is the biggest thing we can do in wrestling, because this guy might be super hot during the 5 years and then super stale, you know, after. Roman Reigns, huge pushes forever. And then people freaking hated him, and they hated him for 5 years, and now they love him again, right? So it's like every 5 years, it changes. Not the business itself, but this the business will change with the world, the way fans see certain things. The death of all baby faces happened when Stone Cold Steve Austin became the new face of wrestling. So the standard baby faces, your Tito Santanas, your Rock and Roll Expresses, your Shawn Michaels would have never made a dime around the same time Stone Cold Steve Austin was popular. So he affected how everybody was working back then, because now The Rock is now a crap talking baby face. Chris Jericho became a draw because of his ability to talk crap. So like the world of that 5 to 10 year period of the Attitude Era, that's one of those examples of like the golden era of wrestling, 80s, 90s, if there was just this switch, and it just one guy. ECW was another, you know, reason why there was a huge switch. That's people just want anything that's not what they've already been watching. And every 5 years it happens, you know. So I don't think there'll ever be an actual GOAT. We can argue. Everyone's Mount Rushmore is going to look different. Mine is Cena, Rock, and Cena, you know? because I think Cena put so many eyes on wrestling in a time where everybody left, right? And I think that that's probably like something that that company rewarded the crap out of him. But then on top of that, I mean, the guy took his personal time and did all the stuff with Make-A-Wish, and he's got like the world record for Make-A-Wish, 600 plus, you know. I have 10, and I'm like, yes, 10. He's got 600 plus, you know, nowhere near. So no one's going to catch that. So like, to me, he's the GOAT. But to other people, well, you know, he's five moves of doom. I hated that guy. So it's like, there's never going to be a real GOAT. There's no stats. There's no free throw percentages. There's no, you know, there's none of that. We don't really get a ring at the end of the day. None of that, right? It's all just a bunch of props. And it's at the end of the day, it's all about making money and selling tickets. So if you're the guy at the time and you're the guy who brings that switch to wrestling, that five-year turn to wrestling, then yeah, you deserve to be the best of that time period. But there's no GOAT. Okay. You know, Ric Flair and Dusty together, they held it down for years, right? But if we go back and we look at it, like, there were a lot of stars that came right after them and made the switch, and then we kind of stopped hearing about Dusty for a little bit. Flair kind of went back down and then, you know. So it always happens. So you can't be on top forever. You become stale. And that's kind of why wrestling is one of those cool things. It's like, you can have a Michael Jordan winning back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back titles, and it's not boring somehow. I guess it's not boring. You can have the Lakers three-peating, and it's just not boring. Like, people want to see it. If John Cena was a champion for 2 years straight, I mean, we'd probably tune out at some point. So the years of Bruno Sammartino holding a title for, what was it, four or five years, mm-hmm. that would never fly now, but he was the GOAT of the time back then. See what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It changes so much that I just don't think it's relevant.
Joe. Do I have to argue against that?
Yeah. Good luck.
I mean, if only Hogan wasn't outed as a racist, I think I have a shot.
And I disagree, but whatever.
I think if I were to argue against this, it would be if you were to ask non-wrestling fans, or if you were to ask just common people, when you think wrestling, I think that's the only way you get to find out the greatest of all time. And I think Hogan is that. I think the majority would be Hogan. I mean, as you get younger, it would probably be Cena, but I think you get into the who was born 2001 and to now. So you have all those people that are alive before that. I think it's still Hogan. I think it is. I think that if you boil it down to grace of all time, you have to pull everybody in it. I think the majority of the people pull up that name, and I think that's where you get. And he was the biggest draw for the longest time. And he did it nationally. He did it worldly. He went over to Japan, and he did it there.
He truly was that Babe Ruth that they always say, the Babe Ruth of wrestling.
Right. Yeah, and I think that is my only argument against what Franco just said, is that if you were to poll and you were to actually look at history, Cena did it for a very long time, and he did it in the dark ages of wrestling. But for so long before that, that name was Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, like, Hogan opened the doors for a lot of people. But I got to ask you, like, Hogan comes up a lot when it's, like I said, at gas stations, people are like, hey, brother, what do you do? I'm like, oh, like Hulk Hogan? You know, yeah, that's the name. But I think for the GOAT aspect is, who's lost more fans than Hogan over the years?
That's a very,
you know, with the steroid scandal, he lost a ton of fans, hurt the business. With the racial stuff, he lost a lot of fans, hurt the business. So it's like, if we're talking about the guy, I think that Hogan opened a lot of doors for people, but he also closed a lot of doors.
I'll give you that point. I'll concede that point, because if you want to talk other sports and you want to talk like greatest of all time, you think Barry Bonds and baseball, and you look at the huge asterisk that is next to his name, being the home run king. Yeah. The home run king.
Mark McGwire.
Beating someone like Hank Aaron. I mean,
but he has that asterisk. And it's the same thing with Hogan. Like, you can't
Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, same thing. Like, those guys are greats of the game, but now we got to hang that over their heads, you know?
Roger Clemens is another one.
I'll take the steroid. I'll take the steroid scandal even out of wrestling, because it's not a sport of where wins and losses count, technically. But I will take the racial thing, and that will be his asterisk against himself.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in professional sports, that where you're not supposed to take performance-enhancing drugs, like baseball, like, that's where it's hard to say. Like, who would step
I gotta up argue with you there, because his whole shtick was
say your prayers,
vitamins and prayers, and he turned off a lot of people. Wasn't that his thing? Take your vitamins, say your prayers?
He never said what kind of vitamins, though.
But think about
cocktail.
Right, but think about
together my vitamins. If he would have did air quotes, it would have been better for him.
Yeah, of course.
Say my prayers and take my vitamins.
If I was him, I would have hired a guy to just do air quotes.
Do that behind him.
I didn't do it, but he did. But I think about how many people he turned off to wrestling when that all came out. So, like, he opened a lot of doors, but he also could have potentially hurt the business to a point where it was just like, I'm not just never watching this again. He lied to us for years. So
that's what I'm saying. If nothing is outed about Hulk Hogan, he would have been the greatest of all time.
Mm.
Now it kind of leaves a void of where you could put in, like you said, it's all circumstantial and it's all time related. Like, you could make an argument for Stone Cold. You can make an argument for The Rock. You can make an argument for Cena, but it's only because one person messed up.
Yeah, and it's also region based too. You know, in the South, nobody baby was better than the Dusty. And then, like, if you go to the Mid-Atlantic, all they know is Flair. Mm-hmm. So, like, Hogan was generally overall the face of the business for a long time, but within those pockets, they didn't even care for him. You know what I mean? So, like, I think Hogan nationally was accepted until the steroid stuff. I think that was like a big deal for him. He damn near went away for a while. He started kind of doing movies a little bit. He had that weird time period where it was in WCW, right? So, like, everything screamed guilty about it. And then the racial stuff just kind of, it was really off-putting. So another reason to give people another reason to give people a reason to tune out of wrestling. So I think if you just hurt the business in any way, especially like this whole the speaking out stuff, if you hurt the business in any kind of way, like, it's just, you shouldn't be part of the conversation, I think.
Well, here's the thing. When all said and done, and we go 50 years and someone digs up this interview from whatever time capsule they need to,
that means I would have drawn a lot of money. And we... So, yeah, hopefully.
this conversation could end up being a different way, and it could be John Cena, the squeaky clean person that won the title 16, 17 times, possibly broke the great Ric Flair's record, and was just he was a draw. He was all. It could be Cena as the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I think so.
When all said and done.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it will be Cena. Because people are now looking at wrestling as far as work rate and a bunch of other things, and I think ethics are a big thing in wrestling now, and then just things outside, you know, because there's so many cameras. I mean, we're all movie producers if you have an iPhone, you know what I'm saying? So there's so many cameras, so many things are on you at all times, where I think Hogan wouldn't have survived it back then, you know? So
I don't think anyone would have. Anyone in that era.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Imagine Ric Flair in this era.
No way.
Yeah, it wouldn't have lasted. So I think Cena being such a good dude for the business and being such a great example for the business, on and off camera, and in and out of the business, I think that's what overall makes him the GOAT in the long run.
Yeah. So, right. Somehow,
if there is the thing,
yeah,
the GOAT.
I think I somehow managed to swing it into a possible win.
Maybe, but I still think that it's so subjective.
All I had to do was get him to say it.
Yeah, I just think that it's so subjective. Because guess what? Cena will never be the GOAT in Canada.
No.
The best there was. Yeah, no. So,
will anyone be better than Bret Hart, though, ever?
Up there?
Up there? Wow, no.
I don't think anyone beats Bret.
I don't think so either.
No. Yeah, no.
So there could be a greatest of all time. It just depends on where you're at.
Yeah, it does. But
we don't know what those people down in Antarctica are doing. We don't know what they got going on down there. Those Antarctica people probably love the Berserker.
Yeah. No, I don't know. They might have their version of Dollar General Junkyard Dog. We don't know. We have no idea.
All right, so to our next topic, and going to the WWE's guy with John Cena, has this new storyline, this bloodline storyline that they've been running with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, has this finally elevated Roman Reigns to where the WWE finally got their guy in Roman Reigns?
Okay, so here's the thing. This is my point first.
Yes.
I think he's always been the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's always been that guy. Here's the thing. WWE, WWF, the Federation, whatever you want to call them, they've always told you who their guy was. They've always been flat out with you. They've always told you who their guy was. And you always fall in line eventually at some point. You might not like him to begin with, but then you grow to like him. Or you might love him and then grow to hate him. But he's always that guy. He's always going to be that forefront. Because without a leader, you have a cluster. You don't have a well put together, well oiled machine like they do. So they need that top person. He's always been that top person. He's been their biggest draw. Love him or hate him, you wanted to either see him get beat or you wanted to see him win, depending on your age group. And now they seem to have flipped the tables, and where the age groups have changed and went topsy turvy. He's still that guy. He's just that guy for the different group of fans. Now the people that cheered him want to see him lose, and now the people that booed him are invested in it. They might not want to see him win, but they are highly invested in what he's got going on and what could potentially be going on in the future for him. He's been that guy. It just depends on what your age range is. He's always been the forefront. Since Cena has passed the torch, it's been the Roman Reigns and nobody else. He's been that guy. Now you just accepted it. You fell in line. You eventually fell in line with what they did. And good on them. They always seem to find a way to do it, don't they?
Yeah, it's like they know what they're doing.
You can give them shit, like you said earlier, and I knew this was going to be the question next. They give him shit. They cheered him when they thought he was going to win the Royal Rumble that year that Batista won. They wanted him to win. He was the guy. And then they took it away and made him the guy the last year. They made him wait that extra year. How dare they? Now we hate him, and we're going to boo him until they do something with him. Now they did it with him, and now you're cheering them. He's the guy. He's always been the guy. You just had to fall in line. Go ahead.
Well, I guess I agree, but at the same time, if I have to argue that, I think I'd say no, because so the whole the tribal chief thing. I think it's very short-sighted, and it kind of takes him in a weird angle.
Predictable angle?
No, not predictable, because it's like, okay, so you just beat the crap out of the Uso brothers for a while, and now you're the tribal chief, but like who do you plug into that, you know? Cuz like you, unless they're building to The Rock, which is very predictable, I don't see them going any other way. You can't really plug in just any other wrestler and challenge him for the tribal chief crown. That makes no sense, you know what I mean? So like, unless you're gonna dust off and bring back like Rikishi or these kinds of guys, like where are we going with this? Obviously a lot of people are predicting he's working with The Rock next, and I think that takes away from his overall stardom to need The Rock to sell tickets. So I think they're getting there eventually, but I think that them going in this direction and needing The Rock to sell tickets, but The Rock's a mega, super mega star, right? I mean, the guy can endorse presidential.
That's smart business on their part. I mean,
right. But again, like, a lot of fans hate we're having to bring back these guys to, you know, every time they brought back Goldberg, they crapped on it.
Goldberg won the title, though. Here's the thing. They crapped on The Rock the first time he came back because he beat Punk. And it was set up Rock versus Cena. When they bring Rock back this time, it's not to win the title.
Right. It's to win the rights to remain the tribal chief of their tribe.
It's to set him apart and to set him as your top heel now. Your top guy. Still your top guy, but your top heel.
But the question is, does that make him the guy? And I think having to work with The Rock doesn't. I think them having to bring back a guy, a mega star like The Rock, it puts that number two stamp on Roman until that match eventually happens. So, like, that storyline, I think, might have hurt him a little bit. If they would have just went with the standard Paul Heyman guy thing that everybody thought was coming, that would have been great. You know, that opens up so many doors. You can work with just anybody. But the whole tribal chief thing, where do we go?
If you take that route, that just makes you generic Brock Lesnar.
Mm. Well, it's been done, and WWE is a company of formulas, so it's been done.
Here's the thing, though.
It worked.
If you run this angle against The Rock, and
it has to be, though. It has to be.
And that's your ending point to put Roman at this meteoric, like, now you beat The Rock. Now you're at WrestleMania, you're the tribal chief.
He accepts you as the tribal chief at WrestleMania.
You elevate the crap out of him.
Yeah. But then he becomes the guy. Right.
But to keep him elevated, now you have to beat the former guys. So now you run an angle with him versus Brock, and Heyman's in the middle now.
Right.
And now that
kind of turns into the whole legend killer aspect that they've done with Orton for years. So, like,
yes, but everything in wrestling is a rehash. Everything.
Of course, yeah, it's all recycled.
Everything's always been done before. If there's minor ways to tweak it, I think that's when you can appreciate it.
But I think for them to say this is the guy, and then have to bring back The Rock, who's obviously no one's bigger than The Rock, especially right now. So that puts him in that number two spot until that match happens because of the storyline.
Can I interject real quick? With you saying this, and you said it twice, and it came to my head the first time you said it. So just to play devil's advocate on that point, you're saying you're bringing in The Rock because he's not the guy yet, and he will anoint him the guy at Mania and with the whole end of the storyline.
Yeah, because where do you go from there? You know, like, the storyline is a little bizarre at this point.
What is that?
It's good, but it's just...
With that, now Hogan Rock back at Mania, what was that match doing? Wasn't that match doing the same thing? Where you brought you have Hogan against The Rock and him elevating
what
him?
What happens when... Full-time wrestler.
Right, no, here's my thing, the whole tribal chief thing, though. What happens when The Rock has to do a movie and they have to prolong the tribal chief thing? Who do you work with then? Like, there's not that many Samoans still wrestling.
Yeah.
So, like, I think... that's where I'm just like, why do that now? Like, they must have already locked down the match.
Of course.
So, like,
locked it down after he did Hobbs and Shaw.
Right. So, like, that's my thing. Is like, okay, until we get that match, we're kind of anticipating the match to the point where it's like, just bring The Rock in already. How can we call Roman the guy when we're anticipating him to work with an even bigger guy? And then what happens to his overall stardom if that match never happens? So it's like, you know, do we just surpass him for, like, I don't know, Orton's doing great work, like always. So, like, do we just kind of skip over, do we hold our breath forever until The Rock shows up for Mania? Or do we just kind of, that was weird, and, like, you beat up all your Samoan brethren to be the tribal chief, and then it means nothing to no one else on the roster because they're not Samoan.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. He's still the guy, though. He's still the anointed
guy. He will always be the guy. He's been the guy since the Shield. He's been the guy since the Shield. But I think in order to counter here, you know, I think the only detriment to him at this point is we're anticipating the match with The Rock. And that's kind of like, can he be truly the number one draw in wrestling if we're waiting for The Rock?
he also needs something different. And anyone that you were to bring up or anyone isn't going to elevate Roman anymore. Say you were to bring up Karrion Kross, someone he's never faced before.
Right.
That's not. That's going to give the eyes on Kross, but that's not going to elevate Roman's already at the top. No,
that's nothing for Roman. Well, other than a great match, it does nothing for Roman. But then why the tribal chief?
Because that fits other in with his culture.
Something cool to put on a T-shirt, you know. Like, where's the end game?
I'll take Tribal Chief over Big Dog any day of the week. I'm just
totally
saying.
Forgot about the Big Dog.
On my side. I'm making that point.
So yeah, all right, let's move to our last topic and put this one in there because it's been 30 years, this Survivor Series, since The Undertaker. 30 years of him wrestling. One of the greatest. You talk about GOAT. That guy is in the conversation. Yeah. So, did The Undertaker damage his legacy by finally breaking character and letting everybody into who the real Undertaker really is? So, Franco, you got this last one.
I think so. So I personally, I watched it and I loved The Undertaker. I thought he was, like you guys said, if there was a GOAT, especially like within the wrestling community, forget the stats, forget the drawing ability, forget the money, forget all that. Within the wrestling community, he's the GOAT. He's obviously been in charge of every locker room for years because he's just that guy. But he came off kind of whiny to me during all of that, and I lost a little, tiny, like 1%, you know, for him. I was like, huh, you've made millions of dollars. You could have stepped away at any point. You knew you were kind of putting on matches that weren't up to your standard, even though the fans loved it. Just the fact that you were showing up, the fans loved it. You left on the highest peak of any performer. God, you know what I would give to just leave my gimmick in the ring and be done with it? Like that, him leaving the jacket and the I would kill for that. So you left and then you came back. So like, I kind of stopped feeling sorry and I started to look at like, why, you know what I mean? So like the documentary did a little, like it hurt the way I looked at him to just my personal opinion. And I just was like, huh, this guy's complaining about a lot of things that he can control. And like, he's not one of the guys under contract. You come up and you work with whatever you want to do. Like, you don't get told to do anything. You've earned the right to say, nah, I'm not doing that match. I want to do this. Or you don't have to answer the phone around April time. You know, you don't have to. So you're one in, one out, you're done. And if you don't like the match, great. You just walk away or don't show up. And I understand the passion. And I understand wanting to be, he is WrestleMania. You know, a WrestleMania without Taker is just weird. But that's why I'm happy that, you know, we found a way to maybe keep him around, which with the cinematic drawing, the cinematic matches to draw people in. But that documentary, I wish it had never happened at this point. Like I watched it and I was kind of like, wow, like, it doesn't make me feel bad for him. It doesn't make me feel anything, but maybe like a tiny bit annoyed. I was just a tiny bit annoyed watching. Like you're in absolute control. Like, as a wrestler, as a performer, as anything you want to call us. Like, we don't get that level of control. We probably get released way before then. So, like, I was just like, man, this guy has it made. Has the biggest company in our business calling him, begging him to come back, and he easily can say no. My body, my this, my knees, my that. And decided to continue to come back, and I applaud that, man. Like, it's tough to say, nah, I'm gonna skip out on the biggest show of the year. Like, performer, it's hard to say, and I understood that, but at the same time, I was just like, man, like, he just came off so whiny. It just made me not a respect thing. I'll never lose respect for him, but it was just like more of a little bit annoyed. I was just kind of like, man, why'd they shoot this? Like, I really wish they did it, you know.
All right. Well, I'll take.
And I don't want to see him as just a dude. He's supposed to be dead.
All right. For non-kayfabe purposes, I mean, I know he was like the longest running kayfaber, probably of all time in character. But what it did, maybe not so much him speaking, but if you ever if anyone ever talked about Taker, they always had to talk about him in character as well. So what I think this did, that now that everyone else was able to breathe this sigh of relief almost and be able to tell real stories about Taker, I think this only builds on his legacy, not so much as just the character and who he was in the ring, but you get to hear from a lot of people of how he was the locker room leader, how he would sit in the back of OVW shows and look at the town and be like, all right, kind of like handpick, like, oh, I can't wait till they come up so I can work with them and get ideas about what he could do to help elevate the next generation. And you don't, from what you hear about wrestling nowadays, there wasn't people that were like that. There's not people that are like that right now. There's someone that is this megastar and who's this person that's revered, not only in front of the screen, but in the locker room by all of his peers. And he's that person who will help try and get you over and put you on the right path to a successful career and help you get the Taker rub. I mean, it kind of helps build on his legacy in that aspect. Never mind what he was saying and how he sold out and took more money to come back, but that might hurt his legacy to some. But I think after you hear of what he did and what he helped build throughout the years to keep wrestling alive, when especially on WWE's end, he never teetered. He was always that, he was that homer. I mean, I know nowadays that that's not a great term of endearment, being a homer, but he was a homer. He was a Vince guy. He helped save that company and drag it through the WCW era when they were trying to combat one another. It was the Undertaker who was the Rock. Not the Rock, but he was the he was the backbone. Like, you could see the people that carried the company on the screen, like Stone Cold and the Rock, but it was the Taker behind the scenes who was there, and Triple H. It was those two guys that were kind of in the back that kept that place together. Because the Rock left, Austin left, Taker never left, Triple H never left. So you get to see, you get to hear that aspect of the behind the scenes, which I think helps his legacy. I don't think that hurts him one bit. It just adds on to it. Like, cool, he was this dark, mysterious guy for 30 years, but he was also behind the scenes, he was this workhorse and this guy that continuously tried to make himself and everyone around him better. And that's what he wanted. He might have been tough. He might have been a tough person to impress, but he was there.
Yeah, no, he was there. He was, like you said, the homer. He was there. Nobody. He was the door. You know, there was the. He's, if you're gonna go into the WWE, you kind of eventually have to get his stamp of approval. But I think that overall, to especially just thinking as a casual fan, like you follow Taker for 30 plus years, and then you see him complaining about things that are easily, you know, avoidable, or it just gives you that
it gives you a sour taste. But I think if you actually were to look at it, be like, okay, well, I enjoyed him for 30 years and never really heard him speak a word besides I'm gonna kick your ass,
right?
I mean, the guy's probably earned a little bit of complaining. Like, he's earned his side of the story after 30 years of silence about how you've worked. And you're finally able to open up and tell your side of it and what went on behind the scenes through your own eyes, well, you get a little bit more respect for that. You're like, all right, well, this guy, yeah, he didn't have to come back, but just to tell us that he didn't want to let Vince down. He didn't want, he felt like he was always there for him. So this is these times where he can be there, because the business isn't how he left it. The business.
No, right. No, yeah. I just, like I said, it's not a respect thing. It's more like I never had a reason to be annoyed with him at all. Especially the character throughout the years. But the Mark Calloway the man, that showed us like the Mark Calloway the man version of the Undertaker, and that was a little bit, tiny bit annoying. So I was just like, okay, well, like, I don't really dig the Mark Calloway. I want more Undertaker. You know what I mean? I don't want to see this anymore. Mm-hmm. I want more Undertaker. Give us more Undertaker. Like, we don't pay to see Mark Calloway. We pay to see Undertaker, you know? So, like, that solidified that, you know, to me. And, like, I think to casual fans, it's like, could we have gone without this documentary? Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's like learning Santa Claus is real.
Great.
But for grown-up.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard about the
30-plus-year-olds.
The Vince McMahon Netflix documentary that I guess is like the highest paid documentary Netflix has ever, you know, we don't know the number yet, but apparently
he sold some stories for that one.
Yeah, so yeah. Apparently it's the highest inked check from Netflix so far. So I'm going to be holding my breath on that too, because I'm like, oh man, I hope they don't make Vince not look like a genius, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, because I think in wrestling, I think you don't you don't run a company that big of a company in a subjective like aspect of something like wrestling. You don't do that by accident, and you don't
Here's the thing with the Vince McMahon documentary. I think Dark Side of the Ring kind of already put that taste in your mouth of Vince maybe not being the genius that he is, because they showed you some of his shortcomings and how he operated on some things, and it kind of makes you question it. So I just think that
he's human.
Yeah,
you know, but like at the end of the day, I would hate the documentary if it was like a Vince McMahon, the common man who made it happen. Like, no, I don't want to see that. I want to see the Vince McMahon every day, like yelling at people to get it done. Like, I want to see the day to day. I don't want to see like the
family man.
This is how I. Yeah, I don't want to. This is how I grew up, and this is it. Like, nah.
Short lines in the back, huh?
Right. Like the you said Dark Side of the Ring. There was also the Bret Hart documentary. There's a bunch that have given you a little taste of Vince throughout the years. But I think this is going to be Vince telling his story,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. Vince telling his side of a lot of stories. And I think that's why they had to come out with the big money. This, you know, because that's something that we and a lot of people. I mean, you talk about Undertaker being huge. Vince McMahon, that name has been huge for years in and out of wrestling. So, and he's another one synonymous with the whole steroids thing and like hurting the business and then bringing it back up. So, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things for pro wrestling. I'm kind of like, oh, gosh, I wonder what. I hope they do a great job. I mean, Tiger King was awesome, right? So I hope the Vince story is great, you know. But I hope they let him tell his story. Yeah, man.
So, Franco, thank you so much for taking the time and being on Fallout. It was great talking to you. Great seeing you.
Did I win?
Well, we're gonna post the show, and we'll put a poll underneath the show, and we'll see who the people have watched and listened think won the debate show.
Awesome.
Three and one.
You're 3-1.
Yeah.
You're probably 4-1 now. man, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. You know, you guys know how to find me online and all that. At Franco Wrestles. I keep it short, sweet, boring. Boring is easy, right? Mm-hmm. So
yep.
And then you guys know I'm, you know, going back to the UK, and then if restrictions lift, you know, I'll hopefully be making my big debut in India in the summer. So that's kind of what I got going for me. I'm the Journey Man is the DVD we're working on, that the Franco Varga The Journey Man. See, play on words.
Yes.
So we're working on that, and this will be like country number 8 for me. So this will be good. So
wow.
I wish I was so, you know, as huge on social media in my first 3 years, and I am now. I post everything now. I'm sure you guys, you know, see it. So yeah, man. I just you guys are one of my favorites, and I'll definitely you know, try to stay in touch with you guys, and hopefully And it was great debating with you guys.
One of the favorites.
Yeah,
you guys are definitely one of my favorites. I don't listen to too many. So I'm in wrestling, right? So I try not to like. Everything I do, I try not to make like everything I do wrestling, you know. Yeah. So like I try to like listen to Joe Rogan or like just anything, The Breakfast Club, things like that. So like on my short list of wrestling, I do listen to you guys. So
appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey,
you know, yeah.
The little thing,
all right? I heard was we're right below Joe Rogan.
There you go. In my book, you are.
So, Franco, thanks so much again. It was great talking to you, and we hope to be talking to you very soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right.